G'day folks, and welcome to Stick With It, APA's podcast for its pilots. Thanks again for your support and feedback. We are glad this initiative is providing another method of information delivery to our members. With Qantas Flight Training on the cusp of introducing evidence-based training, or EBT, to mainline flight crews, we thought it would be a good opportunity to find out a bit more about this topic and how it will impact you on your visits to the sim building. Joining me today is Captain Dirk Darman. Dirk is an A380 captain and is working very hard to ensure a smooth introduction of EBT into the Qantas training department. Welcome, Dirk.
G'day, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Now, Dirk, can you provide us, I guess, to start with some historical background on what evidence-based training is and how it came about?
Sure. So it's a fairly long, convoluted process, but basically in the early 2000s, an ICAO working group was set up, and they basically could see that what we were doing in recurrent training was no longer fit for purpose. As the newer generation of aircraft were coming online, fourth generation jets, we could see that we were still having issues with those aeroplanes. And so they put together a working group in around 2007 and 2008, and that working group went away and created a whole bunch of evidence based on audit findings and accident reports and whatnot, and they set about trying to come together with a better training system that was more suited to these newer generation aircraft. So in 2013, they finally came up with a document, the ICAO 9995 document, and the significance of that document was that it was put together by ICAO as the regulator, if you like, IATA as the airline representative, and of course IFALPA as the pilot representative. So all three major sections of the aviation world came together to design this document. And out of that document came evidence-based training. And broadly speaking, it's just a system for recurrent training that focuses on both tech or traditional tech and non-tech competencies and brings them together just in one group of nine competencies.
So what are the benefits of EBT compared with the type of training that we are currently familiar with?
You'd be familiar with coming in for your recurrent training now and having the session jam-packed with tasks, and it's all very task-based. We might have an incident out online, so we come in and we train that particular task. EBT is much more about growing a toolbox or a tool set from which a pilot can draw experience and knowledge and apply that to any situation. So we no longer need to jam a whole bunch of tasks into one recurrent training session. We are teaching pilots to be able to adapt their skill set to a whole range of issues that they might confront, which is what happens every day when we go flying, right? So when tomorrow you go flying to Sydney, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what sort of threats and errors you're going to be encountering. So the idea of this recurrent training system is to make it far more realistic so that what we train is also what we see out online.
Okay. So what's the time frame for the introduction of EBT into mainline training and operations?
Going for a December 1st launch, so that's across all mainline fleets. And yeah, so we're about 5 weeks away from launch as we record this.
Okay. So can you explain the differences between the new EBT sessions compared with what our members are currently used to?
Absolutely. So the big difference between what we currently do, which is the TRM system, and an EBT system is that you need to think of your recurrent training now as running over day one and day two. So it's a two-day training event that you attend twice a year. Now, the massive benefit about that system, or EBT, is that you come in and on day one, you will go through an evaluation phase, much in the same way as we do now, although they will be two short scenarios, not task-based events as we currently do. You'll then go away, have a short break, come back in and do some manoeuvres training so that we still capture those core skills that we need to have. And then the real magic happens in the debrief on day one, because what happens there is the instructor facilitates a debrief where you and the instructor agree on which of the nine core competencies should be targeted in day two. And day two has a scenario phase, a scenario training phase, which can then be flavored by the instructor to enhance those areas which were maybe a little bit weak on day one, or also potentially really good on day one. So we take those areas that pilots want to work on and then focus on those on day two. The second half of day two at the moment, we'll still be doing UPRT. There's still a fair way to go in that program, so we'll use that time. But really the magic is that you, perfect planning world, have day one and day two, and you have the same instructor over day one and day two, so that you can take the learnings from day one and then focus on those in day two.
Now, you mentioned the nine core competencies. Where have they come from, and can you give us a bit of an idea of what they are?
So the nine core competencies that we're using are the ICAO competencies. They're the same ones that Jetstar have been using for the past 5 years in their EBT system, and in fact Air New Zealand will be using as well. If you were to divide them up into tech and non-tech, then the only tech ones that are in there are application procedures, knowledge, and flight path management, both automatic and manual. The rest of it is communications, leadership and teamwork, problem solving, decision making, situational awareness, and workload management. So they're all things that we're all very familiar with and that we've been teaching in CRM for a long time. But under previous training systems, those had to always be attached to a technical marker, whereas now we are actively grading those as a standalone competency.
Okay. So it seems to me, because it's effectively the second day becomes quite a bespoke thing, that one of the things you need the pilots to do is obviously take a bit of ownership and be pretty honest about their own performance as well, so they can improve the things that maybe they need some work on.
Absolutely. And Mark, the really important thing I want to stress to all the line crew is that the instructors have gone through a lot of training in order to facilitate that. So if you and I go into the sim, it's all well and good to say, well, you need to be honest about your own performance and what areas you need to focus on. But that can only happen if the environment is open, relaxed, safe, all that sort of stuff. Adults learn by making mistakes. So mistakes are a natural part of the learning process. So all of our instructors have gone through a 3-day ground course and then a simulator session. And in that simulator session, they get to experience what it's like to have all sorts of things happen to them that are completely unscripted. Now, that's not what an EBT session is, but the intent of that is to make the instructors feel a little uncomfortable and to learn that you can have a proficient performance that isn't absolutely spotless. Because at the moment, what we tend to do is we tend to focus on the minutiae in a sim session, and anything that's less than perfect gets, so I guess, picked on in normal parlance. But in an EBT session, the sessions are, they're going to be a little bit messy, they're going to be a little bit less than perfect, because I don't know about you, Mark, but every time I go flying, it's a little less than perfect. So, that's a normal part of life. So we focus far more on the safety outcomes of the session, of the scenario. And that can only happen if the instructor creates an environment that is open, relaxed and safe, and as no jeopardy as we can possibly make it. And then, absolutely, you're right, the facilitated debrief process requires a fair bit of input from the trainees. In fact, they should be doing all the talking. It's not about the instructor standing there and telling them where they went wrong. It's about a much more of a, sorry, it sounds a bit new world, but it is a bit of a journey of discovery for pilots as they find themselves in situations that perhaps they haven't encountered or they haven't thought of before.
It sounds like they need to embrace the imperfection.
Ah, well, there you go. Absolutely. And look, I really do mean that. And we will continue to put a lot of effort into the instructing group to make sure that they embrace that and create that environment. That is absolutely the key to it. We did a lot of research with other airlines to see what issues they encountered, and by far the most important aspect of the EBT program is actually the instructor training. We've spent a lot of time and money and effort in that area to make sure that it's gone about in the right way.
So can you still pass or fail a sim? Does that still exist? How does that work now under EBT?
I'd love to be able to say it's completely no jeopardy, but unfortunately the regulations won't allow us to do that. I do try and emphasise that you really can't fail day one. Whatever happens on day one, the opportunity to remediate that is on day two, and that's a normal part of the process. We have had to ensure with the regulator that anyone who's less than proficient on day one, for whatever reason, doesn't go flying if there's a gap between day one and day two. So there can be up to an 8-day gap between day one and day two, because we all know simulators fall over and rostering is sometimes less than perfect. So we've had to provide assurance to the regulator that people don't go flying if they're less than proficient at a particular exercise. And I think everyone would agree that that's fair enough, because it'd be hard to stand up in a court of law and justify otherwise. But really the intent is that you can't really fail day one. Just the lessons from day one go into day two and they're remediated. If they can't be remediated on day two, then we provide further training. And that program has been very successful in Jetstar. So I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be with us as well.
Okay. Now, the days of the sim instructor notes falling off the back of a truck appear to be gone. So how can our members best prepare for their sim sessions under the new EBT?
Exactly the same way as they would prepare for tomorrow's flight. Okay, so the big difference, that you make a very valid point, and I did my own cyclic a couple of weeks ago, and it was very obvious that both myself and the first officer, we knew exactly what was coming. And whilst that makes us feel comfortable in passing that particular task, it's of no benefit to real world experience. So if you think of QF32 if I set up a cyclic where I said, okay, the oxygen bottle at door left two has gone haywire and blown a hole in the side of the aircraft, you'd probably say, well, that's pretty unrealistic. Yet that's exactly what happened to a 747 of ours. You know, the A330 that diverted into Broome is another great example where they had, electrical issues and whatever else. Again, sometimes, you know, if we set up that, people would say, well, that's not very realistic, but it is. It did happen. So setting you up for those sorts of events or setting you up for success during those sorts of events can only happen if you are comfortable with an element of surprise. So the element of surprise that comes into EBT is that there are multiple options for the instructor to choose from, so that even though we do cover a matrix loosely in terms of training topics and whatnot in accordance with the ICAO guides, it allows the instructor to vary when these events happen so that no two sim sessions will be identical. And the intent of that is not to catch people out. The intent of that is to make you comfortable with addressing each and every situation as they arise without a whole bunch of pre-warning and pre-knowledge. You know, a classic example of all of this, Mark, is we have taxi non-compliance events. And we have those, the highest rates of those actually are in Melbourne and Sydney, our two big home ports. So people are going down the wrong taxiways, and it's not because they don't know how to taxi an aircraft or read a JEP chart or follow the lines on the tarmac. It's because of things like workload management, distraction management, maybe communications, maybe some teamwork. So there's a great example of teaching people those core competencies and enhancing those core competencies and testing them a little bit in the recurrent training program so that they can relate those to the real world environment. I really do have to stress, it's not about catching people out or, you know, let's see what happens if I give them this shot or anything like that. The days of the, excuse my French, smart-ass instructor are behind us. That's not possible under EBT.
So in terms of the first day, can you give us a bit of an idea of, actually, in a first day session, some examples of things that might come up? And also, I guess the other question related to that is, if you're coming up with scenarios, where do you draw those scenarios from to then apply to the training?
The scenarios are drawn from real-world experience. But basically, on day one, what will happen is you'll turn up. So you'll click on the IT that we're going to roll out, that hopefully will roll out on time. The IT that we're going to roll out, you'll click into that. It's called ProDefus. You'll have a little to-do list. And in that to-do list, there will be tomorrow's sim session. You'll be able to select essentially a PDF document out of that. That'll give you the route that you're flying. And everyone will be doing the same route. It's not a surprise. You'll know the route, the weather, and we'll give you just a very few bunch of NOTAMs. We don't want to give you 285 NOTAMs. You turn up, and you'll also know what's happening in the manoeuvres training portion of the day. You'll turn up, and the briefing will really be about talking about EBT in the first semester of EBT, because that's a little bit new, discussing some of the manoeuvres that you'll be doing in the second portion of the day. But there won't really be much talk about the evaluation phase, the two scenarios that happen first. The instructor will tell you where they're going to start, and then you can order fuel or whatever is appropriate for that sector. You jump in the sim and you will fly those two scenarios, and they will be less disjointed than they have been in the past. So that'll be, if it's a Melbourne-Sydney, in fact, I think in the first semester we're doing Brisbane-Sydney. So there'll be probably a departure portion and probably an arrival portion, and you'll just fly those two scenarios. And the things that you might encounter, you know, either weather-related, wind-related, environment-related, traffic-related, that sort of stuff, are just the sorts of things we encounter every day. So the E part of EBT, the evidence, is things like go-rounds, for example. We can all do go-rounds really well from, you know, minima and 200 feet, but where they get a bit funky is when we need to do a go around from 1500 feet with a 2000 foot level off. So if you think of 3-4 right in Sydney or any of the runways in LA, that's when people worldwide make a lot of errors. And they're the sorts of things we will be focusing on to improve our performance.
And I'm assuming, because there's two of you in there, there's two sectors, so each of you get to be PF and then PM effectively.
That's right, and importantly, you've just reminded me too that a big difference for EBT is that all second officers will actually be doing exactly the same as captains and FOs. There's a little caveat there. We grade them a little bit differently because they're not fully type rated for things below 20,000 feet, so we take that into account. So they can't record a fail or a not proficient mark against them for things below 20,000 feet, which is fair enough, of course. But they're exposed to exactly the same things. But yes, one PF, one PM for the evaluation. On day two, definitely one PF, one PM. And then the third one, we have a few options depending on perhaps the FOs coming up to command training. So we might give them an opportunity to have a second PF sector so that we can enhance those skills for them.
Okay, and in the brief beforehand, are we still doing the old recalls or, you know, memory items and quiz and limitations, that sort of stuff? Does that still exist?
So, Mark, in my very first sim session in this airline 33 years ago, I had to sit down and recall the 52 memory items on the 747 Classic, and I failed right there and then. So I've been on a mission all my life, and EBT has finally given us permission to get rid of quiz items, because like me in that scenario and like I've seen in others, it's one thing to be able to spit back answers during a briefing. It's a completely different thing to apply them in the real world situation. So yes, we get rid of quiz items in the briefing. What we do is check for knowledge of limitations and memory items during the manoeuvres training portion on day one. So if it's relevant to the maneuver, if we happen to be doing wind shear escape maneuvers, then we'll check for knowledge confirmation there and then. And I don't know about you, but it's a hell of a lot easier sitting in the simulator and having all the dials and things and controls in front of you and recalling what it is you've got to do than it is to sitting in a sterile classroom under the interrogation light being asked what the memory items are. So, you know, our standards haven't changed. This isn't a soft system in that sense. Our standards haven't changed. It's just how we emphasize or what we emphasize has changed.
Okay. Now, will EBT apply to recurrent training only, or is it also going to be part of endorsement and promotional training as well?
Initially, just recurrent training. So the next phase would be to roll it out to your command management sims. So because, of course, they're scenario-based as well. And probably route checks, if we're still doing route checks, then they too are a scenario-based event, if you like. So we would roll out the competencies to route checks. No one really uses EBT for endorsement or type rating training. Airbus will tell you that they do. And what they're saying there is that they use these competencies to grade. But type rating really is still very much task focused, right? I've got to teach you how to do XYZ in the jet. So we'll probably transition to those competencies further down the track, but that's something for later on.
Okay. So if people have any questions regarding the introduction of EBT, where can they send them? Or is it really a case at the moment you guys are going to roll out a communications barrage at people at the appropriate time and maybe after that they can come back at you? What would you recommend?
A bit of both. So this is, and again, thank you for the invite for this. This is one portion of the communication strategy. I'm just working on the user guide now, so there'll be a pilot user guide to EBT and we'll host that on DocuNet. We've got an EBT button on the Qantas Flight Training website. There's nothing in there yet, but that'll be one place. We've got an email address, which is ebtfeedback@qantas.com.au, so we can collect feedback that way. And drum roll, I've also set up a Yammer page, which is the EBT recurrent training Yammer page, because I recognize it's not my natural habitat, but I recognize that's a good way of doing a quick way of having frequently asked questions responded to. So I know Alex Passerini's done a fantastic job there with the tech page. People really like that on their various fleets, so we'll do a similar thing for EBT there. I'll also email each group. You know that our cyclic groups are divided up into A, B and C. So the A group was obviously the first cab off the rank in December. I'll email them again a little bit closer, probably 2 weeks out, and just let them know that, you know, we're thinking of them, we're there for the support, and if they've got any questions, to either use that email, they can always get in touch with me too. My email's out there. So yeah, lots of different ways, Mark.
Okay. So I guess, you know, because it's the old license on the line, you know, and this is going to be new.
No, don't ever say that. Stop that right there. Your license is not on the line.
Okay. All right. My apologies. But anything to do with the training department is always going to generate a bit of anxiety for some more than others. So I guess because it's new, what message can you put out for the members listening in terms of that this, given that other airlines have been doing it for years, that clearly this is a better way? What would be your message to our members?
Two parts to that. Firstly, the first semester will be a very dipping the toe in the water of EBT semester, so there won't be any huge gotchas in the first semester. I can absolutely guarantee that. We're making it a very straightforward event to get everyone used to that and the grading system that's going to be applied to it. And the feedback from our brothers in Jetstar has just been absolutely superb. So they came from quite a checking system to EBT, and they're actually still required to acquit their 121 proficiency check on day one. And despite that, and we won't be doing that, but despite that, the feedback has been absolutely superb, that people feel that they're coming in for a professional/personal development session. And that's why I jumped on you there about the license on the line. It's your license, and just like doctors have to go to conferences, although they manage to do that usually in Vail or Breckenridge or somewhere like that, we go to the simulator, and that's how we professionally develop our skills as pilots. So I really want to emphasise that this is there for you as the pilot to go and learn and enhance your own abilities to then take that out into the real world. So we're there to train. Yes, there's a mandate by CASA to make sure that we're at a proficient standard, and I'll never shy away from that, but it's there as a training tool, not as a checking tool.
All right, well, I apologise for my indiscretion there. Now, I guess just lastly, is there anything else you'd like to add to this discussion, or any other information you'd like to get out to our members before we wrap up today?
No, not really. I mean, take some comfort from the fact that we do have verbal approval now from CASA for the program, that we are potentially, I'm pretty sure this is right to say, we're the first airline in the world to have an EBT baseline system that does not involve a proficiency check element. So that's really cool. We're also the first airline in the world to, not that there's many second officers used in other airlines, but we're the only airline in the world that'll extend EBT out to the second officer cohort. Look, it's there to enhance things, and I could go on, Mark, but I think I'll just leave it at that. The proof will be in the pudding. You will be surveyed. I know people get sick and tired of, you can't buy a packet of chips nowadays without getting a survey thrust at you. I understand that, but there will be the ability for pilots to provide feedback to us. That's really important. It's actually stipulated in the ICAO document that you do that, because it's a process of continual improvement, and that's what we're all about. So hopefully people take that on board.
No worries. And my hope as well, maybe we can get you back in 6 months' time and have a bit more of a chat and see how it's all rolling out. So that sounds great. Well, thanks again to Dirk for his time today. It sounds like a monumental effort to introduce this style of training, so well done on your efforts. That's it for today's chat. As always, you can get in touch with the podcast via email, office@aper.org.au, with podcast in the subject line. We'll have another podcast for you soon. In the meantime, fly safe and stick with it.